Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey West. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today we are talking about the new movie She Said, starring Carey Mulligan and Zoe Kazan. It is about the story of the two New York Times reporters who wrote about Harvey Weinstein and uncovered that whole scandal and sexual assault that was happening in the film industry. So very interesting movie, obviously a real life story. There was a book that was written about it, and now the book was made into a movie. So Katie, you've read the book, so we'll talk about how accurate the book was to the movie and vice versa as we get into our discussion today. But this is, I like a journalism movie, so I'm excited to talk about
so
this.
So do
one.
I. So do I. And I know we've veered away from critics, like doing, like reading their reviews and stuff, but I looked at one and they said something about their, like, it was an actual critic that said, "I love journalism movies a la All the President's Men and Spotlight." And I was like, wow, you just named two of my all-time favorites. So
yeah, and it's been a while since we've gotten, I mean, we had The Post a couple years ago, but I didn't love that as much as, say, Spotlight.
Either.
I think this one is closer to Spotlight, though, than The Post in terms of quality. So we'll talk about that today. We do have some news items. First, the big news item, kind of the shocker, is that Bob Iger is back as the CEO of the Walt Disney Company, taking over for Bob Chapek. That was announced earlier today. So I don't know what changes he's going to make, but the company was doing well when he was in charge, and then the new guy took over and they weren't doing so well, so they put the old guy back in charge. So
yeah, I'm glad you knew that happened, because I didn't know that happened. Yeah. But I do know who Bob Iger is, so I was kind of like, oh, interesting. Okay, because,
yeah,
you know, I wouldn't say I don't keep up a lot with Disney news. Not that I don't care, but for me, it's just not as relevant, and, you know, it doesn't pop up a lot for me. But.
Yeah.
And
he
then
wrote
a book
a couple of years ago, too.
Yes.
Called The Ride of a Lifetime, which is a really good leadership book if you want to just read it. So, yeah.
We debated that. I think somebody recommended that for our workbook club, because I lead the workbook club. But we did a lot of times, if it's like a management book or a book about work, most people in our book club don't pick that, which I would agree.
Which makes sense,
But I knew of that book because of that.
Nice. So, some sad news. Olivia Wilde and Harry Styles have apparently broken up and called it quits for now.
Allegedly, we think. No one has confirmed this, but
no.
Jared, I was really, really sad about this. I know that I talk a lot about how much I'm obsessed with Harry Styles, but I really wanted them to work out. I wanted them to get married. I wanted them to go the distance. I was very excited about this. So I'm really sad. I couldn't believe how upset I was, really.
Yeah, I thought it was, I mean, I was hoping the best for them, but it's always tough when you have two people who are, like, in very high demand entertainment careers. Like, she's obviously making movies and starring in movies. He's obviously performing and starring in movies and, you know, doing concerts and all that. So
yeah,
I feel like schedule-wise, that's really hard to coordinate. Whereas if you have, especially two people from two different industries, like if you have two people in the same industry, I think of like Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively as an example, like they're both actors. So like that, I feel like that might coordinate a little bit easier, where you can like plan to film movies at the same time and then be home together at the same time.
Right.
Stuff like that. Whereas like touring is a lot more difficult in terms of the schedule and stuff. So,
well, and I think it made me even more sad, because I feel like half their relationship was plagued with people just trash talking them and trash talking the movie. And, you know, you and I reviewed it. It wasn't my favorite movie of all time.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't think that, I feel like people treated everything about that movie and the people in that movie unfairly, because of just assumptions about age differences and if someone hurt Jason Sudeikis. And I'm just like, they shouldn't really, like, one doesn't relate to the other. I don't know. But I feel like for a year they were just battling that. So they had like 1 year of privacy and doing whatever they wanted. So anyway, I was just much more shaken up by that and saddened by that news than I fully expected to be.
Also, another news item is Michael J. Fox got an honorary Oscar over the weekend, known as the Jean Hersholt Humanitarian Award, and that was given to him for his research with Parkinson's and his advocacy, and he got a standing ovation at that ceremony where he was honored. Of course, Michael J. Fox has done a ton for Parkinson's research throughout his lifetime, and really just it seems like a very nice guy from what everybody says about him, and he's just very joyful. So that was very cool to see that he received that lifetime kind of achievement award, the humanitarian award.
Yeah, he is definitely one of my favorite, probably people I look up to the most in the industry. And he, obviously it's very nice to get an honorary Oscar, no matter what, but it was nice that he was recognized for his humanitarian work. And he's been doing advocacy and raising money for over 30 years now for Parkinson's, because he was diagnosed, I read this all today, he was diagnosed when he was 29.
Okay.
And his foundation, just that foundation, has raised over $1 billion for Parkinson's research. So it's incredible what he's done. And I like him too, because he's definitely an optimist and I'm an optimist, but he also is very realistic. He like says, you know, he'll say like, this sucks. Like, this disease sucks. A lot of this is awful. He even said in the ceremony, Woody Harrelson presented him with it. And he was saying like, I can't walk and hold this award at the same time anymore. Like that, that's true. That's like really, that's hard to hear someone say, let alone imagining if that was you. But I just, I like that he is honest about it, but is still very much glass half full. I greatly admire him. I love his wife, Tracy. They've been married since the year I was born.
Okay.
And they have 4 kids, and I've read a couple of his books. I just think he's pretty wonderful. So good for him.
Nice. Only other news item I had real quick is I just saw this tweet. Bullet Train is coming to Netflix on December 3rd. So if you didn't see that in theaters and you didn't listen to our, we did review that movie. So if you want to watch it and then listen to our review of it, you'll be able to do that December 3rd. It's on Netflix. So
that is too perfect.
Just
my friend
in time
is
for the holidays.
Yeah, that's so perfect, because my friend is going to Japan, and we were just talking over the weekend, all the people in the play, about that movie, and we were like, you should see that, and so now you can watch that before. But yeah, I enjoyed that movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty good. So you can check that out on Netflix in December. So recommendations, I just have 2 things today. First up, Elton John's final U.S. concert of his very long tour was last night at Dodger. We're recording this on Monday. It was last night at Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles.
Okay.
They live streamed it on Disney Plus, and it's still on Disney Plus if you want to go watch it. So I did not watch it last night when it was live, but I watched part of it today. And it, you know, he's playing all the hits and having a great time. And I just thought that that was cool that they filmed that to put on Disney Plus, because obviously tickets to see Elton John on his farewell tour were outrageously expensive. So
yeah,
it's cool that even though you couldn't see him in person, you still have this experience that you can watch on Disney Plus. So that's on there if you want to check it out. And then my only other recommendation is the movie The Menu. I went and saw that last week as well. Really enjoyed it. A really solid thriller with Anya Taylor-Joy, Ralph Fiennes. It's about a chef who has this restaurant that's out in this remote area on this island, and it's very expensive to get in and have dinner there. So, and lots of obviously chaos ensues, and things don't go quite as planned throughout the course of the movie. So, but it's really well done. It takes place mostly in one room. So I think that's interesting, because that usually requires good acting and a good script to keep you engaged when the set's not changing a lot. And they just go through like the dinner kind of in order. So they start with like the first course all the way through dessert. And then that's basically the whole movie, is them going to the island, having dinner, and then the movie's over. So I don't want to spoil it. There's more that happens, obviously, but I would check it out if you're a fan of thrillers, or if you like any of the actors in that. I thought Ralph Fiennes in particular did a really good job. He plays the chef in the movie. So,
man, he's good at everything.
Yeah.
Like, I'd watch him. I would watch him in pretty much any movie ever. And he's so good. He can be a villain, and he can also be a great, like, nice guy.
Yeah,
you just
this
never
movie,
know what you're gonna get.
He's definitely more of a villain, which you
know
from
that,
the trailers, but yeah.
Well, and, you know, I also think of him always in Schindler's List, where we hate him. So but he's such a great actor. I'm glad you liked that. I have a feeling I'm going to end up seeing that at some point. I have no recommendations. The play overtook my life there for a little bit. I'm having trouble like adjusting today to not having a rehearsal, but like just catching up on my life. I did deactivate my Twitter account. That was
okay.
I just felt like I don't do anything on it, and nobody cares if I'm on it. But I also was like, I don't want to support Elon, and I'm just very disgusted by everything that's going on. And I was like, I'm done. I'm done with this. Goodbye. So I deactivated it and deleted the app off my phone. So goodbye, Twitter.
There you go. Goodbye, yep. Katie Miss Prime. So yeah.
I did the other things I did think about. There were two things this week. I did think about mentioning the shooting that happened over the weekend
In Colorado. Yeah.
Which is just disgusting. And then I also thought, I mean, I'm clearly mentioning these things. Candace Cameron Bure, her comments too kind of coincide with that shooting. She doesn't overtly say I hate gay people, but she implies it very hardcore. But I was not a huge fan of Full House. And I also am definitely
okay.
I'm 100% not a fan of Candace Cameron Bure. So I don't know. I just thought a lot of that stuff is really sad. And then like Twitter, I was thinking about that and I was like, you know what? There's some villains in this world and I'm not going to contribute to their tomfoolery, for lack of a better word. But anyway, but I am finally, I'm very excited for December. I'm going to read. So you guys better get ready because I have to power through like 15 books or something to get to 100. So it's about to be a marathon. If I don't answer your phone call, it's probably because I'm knee deep in a book or fell asleep reading.
There you go. So also, if you listen to this and you're in the eastern part of the United States, hope you're doing okay with the snowstorm. Obviously, there's that huge snowstorm in New York that dropped.
Didn't
like
even know.
80
Where
inches
have I
of
been?
Snow. Yeah.
What? Was, how many?
Yeah, it was like 77 or 80 inches of snow in like Buffalo, New York. It was crazy. So.
Oh, I hope everyone's okay.
Yeah, I think from what I've heard so far is that they were very well prepared.
Good.
They knew it was coming. They had everything kind of in place, and
yeah.
So I think they were able to kind of handle it pretty well, in terms of clearing roads and, you know, not too many people losing power and things like. It doesn't seem like there was a big issue, which is good considering that much snow. So it seems like city management was ready to go there, and they had the resources they needed. So.
Well, that's, you know what? That's a very positive note to end on. So, great.
So, okay, on to our discussion of She Said, released on November 18th of 2022. It's rated R for language and descriptions of sexual assault. It's 2 hours and 9 minutes or 2 hours and 15 minutes, depending on what you look at, I guess. So
I was like, wow, that's the biggest variation we've had ever.
6 minutes. I feel like, it's not hard to time a movie. Like,
I don't know. I don't get it. And I did not put this warning in the notes, but this movie completely revolves around sexual assault and anything of that nature. So trigger warning if that is not something you want to hear about, but I thought this movie was excellent and I have a lot of good things to say about it.
So IMDb, it's a 7.4 out of 10. And then Rotten Tomatoes critics is 88%, audience 86%. Box office wise, it's made about $2.8 million worldwide so far. Most of that has been here in the United States. A little disappointing. I was hoping.
Yeah.
It seemed like they advertised this movie a decent amount. I saw a lot of trailers and, like, you know, Facebook ads and things for it, stuff like that. So
yeah.
I thought I was hoping it would maybe do a little bit better, but unfortunately, did not have a great opening weekend. Yeah.
Yeah. I hope it picks up a little momentum over Thanksgiving because people will be able to go see movies and stuff. And who knows?
So the synopsis for this movie is New York Times reporters Megan Toohey and Jodi Kantor break one of the most important stories in a generation, a story that helped ignite a movement and shatter decades of silence around the subject of sexual assault in Hollywood. And this movie is directed by Maria Schrader. She is from Germany, and in 2020, she won an Emmy for directing the miniseries on television Unorthodox, and she also directed I'm Your Man and Love Life, and she doesn't have any upcoming projects currently listed. So obviously we'll probably be making something after this, but has not said what that is yet. So we will take a quick break here on the show. We'll come back and talk about the cast and our likes and dislikes for She Said. And we're back here on the Silver Screen Podcast talking about She Said. And this movie is basically has two people in lead roles throughout the course of the film. That would be the two journalists. The first one of those is Carey Mulligan, who plays Megan Toohey in the movie.
Jared, I'm going to need several crush alerts for Carey Mulligan, please. Thank you so much. Carey Mulligan is one of my favorite people. And you know what else? This has also come up recently with people. And some people don't agree with me, or I don't know if they don't find her hot, or if I don't know what the issue is, but I think she is brilliant. I think she is a wonderful actress, and I love her style, both on and off the red carpet. And she's just someone I actually really quite admire. And she's lucky because she's married to Marcus Mumford. So anyway.
Yeah.
Carey Mulligan, she plays Megan Toohey in this movie. Carrie is an English actress best known for Shame, Drive, Pride and Prejudice, Promising Young Woman, The Great Gatsby, Mudbound, and The Dig. I have seen all of those. She has been nominated for 2 Best Actress Oscars already for Promising Young Woman and An Education. Next up, she has a slew of projects including Spaceman, Maestro, and Wildwood. Maestro, I'm very eager to see because Bradley Cooper's in that. I think he's directing it. And I think it's about Leonard Bernstein, but it could be. Oh. I think it is Bernstein. Yes. Okay. And they've been filming that in New York. I don't even know why I know so much about that movie, but yeah. But Jared, if you can fact check, I do think it's Leonard Bernstein.
Sure.
But
I think you're correct, but let me look here.
But I'm really excited to see that. And I'm pretty sure Bradley's directing it too. And I think there was some story when we did another podcast episode, there was some story about someone coming to him and telling him he needed to direct it. I wonder if it was Spielberg. Someone came to him and said he has to direct it. Could have been Scorsese.
Yeah, it is. It is about Leonard Bernstein. He is directing it. Carey Mulligan's in it. Maya Hawke's also in it. Matt Bomer,
I think. Yep.
Bomer, yeah. And Sarah Silverman are kind of the main people. So,
I think that'll be really interesting, that movie.
No release date yet, but it's in post-production. So probably next year, I would guess. So
cool. And yes, I think that's always, I don't know if it's Bomer or Bomer, and I hear both all the time. So I actually have no idea. I just really like him. Let's just call him Matt, like we're on a first name basis.
There we go.
Great. Next up, we have Zoe Kazan. She plays Jodi Kantor, another real life person. Zoe is best known for The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, The Big Sick, What If, and Ruby Sparks. She is the granddaughter of Ilya Kazan, the famous director, if you did not know that. So she has a part of a legacy family. And then she and her partner, Paul Dano, I've definitely made my thoughts known on him on this podcast. They just had their second baby several weeks ago. I'm amazed by that because she literally is like 3 weeks postpartum and went on, it was
on the Today Show the
Seth
other day.
Myers. Yeah, she's been all over the place. it was Seth Meyers. That's what I watched her on. And she like just had a baby. And I know like women are amazing. But if you did if you needed further evidence, just please like watch Zoe in any of these interviews because she is traveling and pumping and like all over the place raising 2 kids. Incredible. But she doesn't, I wanted to share that because she doesn't have any upcoming projects listed. So I thought I would share other great, interesting news about her life right now. And also, I watched several interviews. Carrie and Zoe have known each other for over 14 years. They met doing a play together. And so they're actually very good friends in real life. I did not know.
Okay. Very nice.
Yes. And then lastly, we have Patricia Clarkson. She plays Rebecca Corbett, who is another real life person. And in the book, Jodi and Megan said that Rebecca deserves just as much credit as they do for their reporting and everything, because she advocated for them the whole time they were doing this story. Anyway, fun thing that I looked up, Jared, because, you know, I love doing like these connections, but her birthday is the day after mine. But what's even weirder is I wanted to look up Jennifer Eyal, who is a supporting actor in this movie. I looked her up. Her birthday's the same day as Patricia Clarkson's. Isn't that weird?
Oh, that's wild. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was just like, oh, wow, December 29th. That's cool. We're close together. And then Jennifer Eyal has the same birthday. So very weird. Anyway, Patricia Clarkson is best known for The Station Agent, The Green Mile, Far From Heaven, and Shutter Island, along with the TV series House of Cards and Sharp Objects. She was nominated for a Best Supporting Actress Oscar for her role in Pieces of April. And next up, she has a ton of projects, including Grey, Lily, and Light on Broken Glass. And this movie also has an all-star cast of primarily women, but we should definitely mention Andre Brower. He's fantastic. Jennifer Eyal, Samantha Morton, Peter Friedman, Ashley Judd, and Angela Yao, among others.
Nice. Very nice. The guy that plays Harvey Weinstein's like lawyer.
Yeah. That's Peter Friedman.
In? Okay. Peter Friedman.
I know him.
Okay.
Yes. I know him from something too. I want to say he's actually in a Tom Hanks movie.
I thought it was Succession, but maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was something else. I'm looking it up real quick. So
okay, thank you. Sorry. I thought to look that up too because I recognized him. But he was good at that part.
Okay. Yeah, he is on Succession.
That's what
it
is.
Him.
Okay. Yeah. We've both. Oh man, I can't wait for that show to come back.
I know. And he kind of plays the same role in that show. He's like, you know, Logan's financial advisor.
He's good at being he's good at being like a lawyer or businessman type who's like not really on the up and up, but he's not the worst character.
Yeah. So Okay, let's talk about some likes and dislikes for She Said. First, you read the book, and you said that the book and the movie are pretty close in terms of like what happens on screen versus what happened in the book.
Yes, Jared, it was crazy how close this was to the book. And I just finished the book. I mean, it was probably a week ago, but I wanted to read it before I saw the movie. And there were so many things that if you watch the movie, you're like, oh, surely they over-dramatized that. And they didn't. Like things like Ashley Judd at the last minute calling and saying, I'll go on the record. It really was last minute. Or things like Gwyneth Paltrow, she was definitely involved. She also said, like, I'm not comfortable in real life. She was like, I'm not comfortable in this first like depiction or whatever, like your first version of the story. But if you have follow-up stories, I'll be in it. All of that happened. They didn't really get into that because all of this was leading up to the writing of the first article. But like all these things that you think are very over-dramatized really did happen and kind of in that timeline as well. I do think there were some, we'll talk about in dislikes. I do think there were some pacing issues and I do think they had to change things because this is years of work that they're condensing into a film. But anyway, sorry, Jared is so funny. I don't mean to, we can chat with each other during this and yeah, Gwyneth did not go on the record at the very beginning.
Yeah,
and
there's
all
basically,
the journalists were screaming, Gwyneth isn't in the story in the film when they're Harvey keeps saying, why is Gwyneth talking to you? Man, what an idiot. I hate him so
I know.
Much.
It's
but
kind of
also,
like a recurring joke that they use
yes.
for some humor throughout
it,
the movie. Yeah.
It was crazy. What it sounds like in the book, it does sound like he kept asking, like, is Gwen going on
okay.
the record? Which as if why is Gwen gonna make the difference? She had won an Oscar and stuff, so she was definitely like a Weinstein darling. Like she was like
yeah,
the poster
yep.
child of the Weinstein company. But or Miramax at the time, whichever one did Shakespeare in Love, which man, I love that movie. What was I going to tell you? The other weird thing, I find this stuff kind of just crazy that all of this is happening at the same time, but the play I was just in was Harvey. And I was thinking how crazy it was that, Harvey is this like wonderful magical character in the play that I was just in. But then I go see this movie, the day, like one of the days we had a performance and everybody's talking about Harvey Weinstein and he's just the most despicable human being in the whole world. And we even talk in the play about how Harvey is not a common name because it's not, but it's weird that it's popped up. It's been prevalent in my life recently. But anyway, Harvey is a piece of crap. And they did a lot of the stories that we saw depicted in the movie or they talked about it or we heard audio of it. That was like word for word from the book as well. So they did a really tremendous job. And I think that it is so incredibly rare that a movie follows a book so closely. So I was very impressed by that.
So one thing I liked about this movie, which I think kind of leads into your next like, is I liked that it showed so much the pressure and the stress that Carey Mulligan and Zoe Kazan were under as Jody and Megan. Obviously, they're writing a very impactful story, and there's a lot of moving parts. They're trying to get people to go on the record. They're trying to get people to talk. And they're traveling across the country or across the world to try and find something that they can, because they know what's happening. They just need some evidence to be able to, you know, prove it. So I thought that is something you don't really see in journalism movies a lot, is just the stress that the journalists are under. You know, in Spotlight, you don't really see that very much. The Post, you get it a little bit. All the President's Men, a little bit. But yeah.
Well, they get like their lives were threatened multiple times because they were bringing down a president, not even just like a powerhouse producer guy.
But I thought this one really showed it very well in terms of like how stuff just happens 24 hours a day. It could be any time of the day when something pops up or you need to go meet with somebody or whatever. So I just thought it captured that aspect really well of how like just how hard it was for those two to write that story in terms of just, you know, what they had to go through to write the story.
Jared, you bring up a great point, too, though, about that, because they also were put under different pressure because they were women. And also, they did have to take safety and stuff, take it a little bit more seriously as well, which we saw in the movie, too. And then that does tie in to one of my dislikes a little later. But I agree with you. I thought they did a very good job of showing how these women are in a pressure cooker. And then also how, like, Carey Mulligan, her character in real life, Megan, did battle postpartum depression, and Carey Mulligan did too. when they talk about this in this interview. And so I like that that was depicted in the film. And then Zoe Kazan, she said what she learned or liked the most about making this movie was that she never realized how difficult journalism was. She was like, I thought people were like, here's a story. They wrote the story and they published it. She didn't realize all the fact checking, all the stuff you have to go through to get confirmation. And I thought that was a good point for her to address as an actor, because I don't think a lot of people, if you don't care about journalism or grew up studying about it, you wouldn't know that.
Another like for me too, is that, you said, you know, you mentioned that Zoe Kazan and Carey Mulligan have been friends in real life for quite a while.
Yeah.
You could definitely tell that in this movie. Their connection on screen is just, it's something that you can't, I mean, you can't fake it. It's just,
right.
It comes from being friends for so long. And obviously they're playing coworkers in this movie, but also friends. But I just thought on screen, it was very natural, the two of them together. I don't know if it would have worked if you had put two different people together. You know, if Carey Mulligan had been with somebody maybe she'd never acted with before, or didn't know personally.
Yeah.
I just don't think it works as well. So even though Zoe Kazan is not, I would say, as high level of an actress as maybe Carey Mulligan in terms of projects that she's been in, I think it works well in this movie because of that real life dynamic that they already had going into it. So
yes, I think that's a really great point.
So another like that you had is that this movie is very powerful. There's a lot of scenes in this movie that are very impactful in terms of either somebody speaking or something being depicted on screen. It's not an easy movie to watch just due to the subject matter, and that comes through in a lot of impactful scenes.
Yes. The scene specifically that just took my breath away was there's an audio recording, a whole conversation that's real. It is Harvey Weinstein's voice. Like, this was real. There was a woman who wanted to help catch him, and she wore a wire so that she could get him on film being disgusting. And she did, but he was like threatening her and very abrasive, and it was just crazy how demeaning, like how he talked down to her and how he was just like, this is just what people do and this is what's expected of you, and don't embarrass me in this hotel, don't embarrass me, how dare you embarrass me. And I just thought, like, Harvey, you're like a disgusting pig of a man. You're not even a man, you're a garbage. But the whole recording, I was shaking in the theater. And I haven't, I feel like, I do think this affected me very differently as a woman who's had different life experiences, but some bad ones that can be related to this. And it was just terrifying. And I thought, like, I can't even imagine how people live, like how these survivors are okay when I'm this visibly upset just listening to a conversation in a theater where I'm safe and sound. So I thought that was an excellent choice to put that in the movie. And overall, I was just really impressed. A lot of the people depicted on this film, how much they were like the real people, or putting like Ashley Judd into the film and putting real audio in of people who were actually engaged in these and bringing Harvey Weinstein down. But Ashley Judd, especially, she was the first celebrity. Rose McGowan was helpful, and that was one thing I wish they would have shown more of, because Rose McGowan kind of changed halfway through and was like, I'm going to help. But Ashley Judd really was that whole line at the end where she says, I'll go on the record as a woman and a Christian. That's like verbatim what she said. That's a direct quote from the book. That's exactly what she said. And she really did like go on a run. All of that was like exactly how it happened, where she's like, I had some time to think. I'm ready to go. But I just thought they did a really good job. I think a lot of this was because it's a movie about journalism and fact checking and everything. So they made sure the movie like fit that.
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. So yeah. And you mentioned that audio recording, that scene was definitely very powerful because the way they shoot it is, it's just like, there's nobody acting on screen when that's happening. It's just a camera going down a hotel hallway and you're hearing the audio, and that even makes it more impactful that that's really the only thing you're focusing on during that 3 or 4 minutes of the movie. So, another like is that obviously this is a movie about female journalists directed by a woman. So I think that whole connection works well, helps the story be told. It's also, you know, the story involved in the movie is a story involving women and women's experiences with this man. So the fact that it was basically female led from the top down, I think makes it better than it probably would be if it was directed by a man. So
Yes. That was so cool, too, because Jared always is good about reminding me about the, what do we call it? I forget what we call it. The test where it's if you have enough women.
Oh, it's
as you do men.
Yeah, I gotta look. It's if two women talk on screen about something other than a man, basically.
Oh, so maybe they didn't. Well, maybe they did.
I think they did that. It's called the Bechdel test, basically.
The Bechdel test, yes.
It's two women characters talking to each other about something other than a man.
Yeah.
In the movie.
They did. They talked about postpartum depression and stuff.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was so neat because just how we saw Black Panther Wakanda Forever, it's almost entirely people of color. And that was so neat to see. And it's noticeable and it's sad that that stands out in a movie. Like, we still are having to like call out, oh, this one movie this year featured people of color. But it was also neat that in this movie, it was like there were barely any men. Or if they were men, they were just horrible human beings. Like there were some good husbands in this film, absolutely, and some good dads. But for the most part, every man we encounter is slimy. So I just thought that was neat. And I definitely, Jared, you were the one that brought up last week, I think, or about a different movie about how it would have been. There was a movie that we did. And you said it would have been different if a woman directed it. And mm-hmm. so that made me think this one, how I don't think anybody but a woman could have directed this film.
Yeah. Basically, Andre Brouwer is like the only good guy
yes,
in this
love
movie.
Him.
He's about
yes.
it.
And he was so good in that role. I mean, that role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was good because the women, you know, we definitely see how they weren't taken as seriously, even though they were already very revered in their journalism fields and very respected, but it was neat. He would just get on the phone with Harvey and be like, we don't have time for this, Harvey, get it to me. And you have this much time. And he would just hang up the phone, but the women didn't do that. And I don't know that I would feel empowered to do that, but they needed him in their corner. And it was great that he was in their corner.
So another like for this movie is we never see Harvey obviously on screen. You see him from the you see an actor playing him from the backside for like 10 seconds, but you never see his face, and there's no pictures of him or anything in the movie. I mean, we all know what he looks like. We all know
gross
what he did. So I like that they didn't, you know, highlight him in this film. So
yes, because a lot of times this happens since I listen all the time to true crime podcasts and things. A lot of times you hear about people talking and sharing the name of the serial killer or the murderer or whatever. You don't hear as much about survivors or victims. And so a lot of these women, this really honored the women that were brave enough to do something, that met and helped with this story, the women that researched this story, the editor that supported this story. And all we see of Harvey is some guy who doesn't look good, but we never see his face. You only hear his voice. And I thought that was a really good choice because he doesn't deserve any more time and attention.
Do you have any other likes before we move on to dislikes?
That is it. Thank
you. One thing I wanted to bring up before, it's not really a like, it's not really a dislike. I just thought it was interesting. So this is a movie made by a movie company, Universal, about another movie company in, you know, Weinstein, the movies that they made. So I thought that was kind of interesting in terms of like, this is a major studio. It's Universal, Annapurna, and then Plan B, Brad Pitt's production company involved with this, obviously, because it's a good movie and Brad Pitt only produces good movies. So, but I thought it was, I don't know if Universal's trying to be like the good guys and saying, hey, look at us, we made a movie about this situation, and we financed it and we paid for it to be, you know, seen or whatever.
Yeah.
I just thought that was interesting because it's, you know, it's a movie featuring a company that makes movies, but it was released by a different company. I thought that was interesting on the backside of things in terms of that dynamic. So
well, and that's why we need you, Jared, because that is something it didn't occur to me. But when you said that too, so Brad Pitt also has another reason to be interested in this film. Gwyneth Paltrow was taken advantage of by Harvey, but the same kind of things did not happen to her. But she was, which a lot of the women did this, it's not just Gwyneth. She went and told her then boyfriend at the time, Brad Pitt, immediately about the situation with Harvey. And Brad Pitt threatened Harvey because he's an angel and beautiful. He was invested in this film, I think, and also in this story because he knew about this back in the day when it was happening and did not like Harvey. But I do agree with you. I think that Brad I am just as impressed with Brad's ability to produce films as I am of him as an actor. He like every movie he seems to produce generates a ton of revenue, but also is usually very good. But it's interesting. You're right. All of these different things that we have to, that this movie brings to light, like who's producing it? Why are they producing it? Who decided to finance the film and why, et cetera. Mm-hmm.
Also, if you're wondering, some of the highest grossing movies for the Weinstein Company included such films like Django Unchained, The King's Speech, Silver Linings Playbook, Inglourious Basterds, The Butler, The Imitation Game. Those are all in the top 10 of their probably most popular movies. So if you think about those are some well-revered movies in terms of Academy Award winning and great performances in those. But, you know, we talk about Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt's obviously in Inglourious Basterds, which is a Weinstein Company movie, but then produced this movie. So now I don't know how much Brad Pitt knew. This was back, that was back in 2009 as well. So he may have not known what the situation was. I don't know how much that was relayed publicly or how many people behind the scenes actually knew what was going on. So, but again, just like an interesting dynamic that he was in a Weinstein Company movie, a pretty successful one, and then produced this movie. So
I don't know what he did either, but I like, I don't know how much he knew at the time. It does seem like almost everybody in Hollywood knew something was going on, but that would have been fairly early on. But also he did immediately confront Harvey, which I really appreciate. But again, it's sad that Brad would be able to do that. Gwyneth, her career would have been over. So
Exactly. Yeah. So some dislikes now. This movie, if you're not super interested in journalism, could seem slow. I've seen that complaint a little bit, and I would agree. It's just a movie of a bunch of people talking to a bunch of different people. I mean, that's the whole film is just conversations, which is cool. But yeah, I like that too. But I could see if you're not into that sort of thing, how I don't think this has as much, I don't know what the word is, but like, maybe it's not even, I don't even think it's as dramatic as something like Spotlight or All the President's Men, which is kind of leads into another one of my dislikes, that I think it needed to have more of an emotional payoff in certain parts. But I think that combined with the slowness of it could be a turnoff if you're not super interested in this topic.
So I actually did. I thought there were a lot of emotional payoffs. Like Zoe Kazan was clearly so invested in these women. And when Ashley called and said, I'll jump on the story. And when she got some of the women to like give her papers, documents with, and even that guy, Irvin, he hated Harvey. Like when they say that in the book, they talk about him forever. He was extremely helpful with the story. He hated Harvey for years. He did not want to speak to Harvey or have anything to do with him. He just took the money and worked there. But I love that in the end, he like really helped with the downfall. Not like he's a perfect person, because he still had a big hand in helping cover up all of his illicit activities. Also, another line that he says in the film, people kept saying, I just thought this was like extramarital affairs. And I'm like, why was that acceptable? Like, why were you like, well, it's just a regular extramarital affair, it's no big deal? And I'm like, why was that okay? Like, why was that not a red flag for you? And why, like, why did you not question more? But whatever, it's not, I digress. It's, but I agree with you, Jared, about the, well, I brought up, because I thought you and I would both like this film, but I wanted to point out for people who might not like this, they might not like movies where you're just, people are interviewing other people and stuff. Now I thought there was a lot of emotional payoff, but I didn't think it was as exciting or thrilling as depicted in the trailer. And that bothered me, because I could see that tricking people to go see the film and they're going to be like, oh my gosh, people are going to get shot at. It's going to be very exciting. And it's not like that at all. I mean, it is scary, and they were threatened. All the women were threatened, and there were definitely people calling the reporters and the women that were helping and saying things like, I'm going to rape you. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill your family. People did that. So that's completely unacceptable. But I did think that the trailers kept alluding to this being like All the President's Men or something, where there'd be car chases and people with guns going after them and their family. But that was not the case.
Yeah, I think what I would have liked is maybe more just of an emotional payoff maybe at the end of the movie, because you learn about 3/4 of the way through the movie that, I forget, there's another publication, the one Ronan Farrow is involved with, that
I think it's the Washington Post, which is, they were the ones that wrote the Watergate story.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I'll double check that it's, it might be Vanity Fair. I'll check.
Okay.
I'll check.
I forget who it was, but anyway, they bring up that there's another, you know, organization that's working on this story. And so now these two newspapers or magazines, depending on what it was, are now working to try and put the story out first. And I just thought there needed to be more of a sense of like tension there, or the timing was, you know, of the essence in terms of getting the story written. I just thought it didn't have as much of a dramatic impact at the very end of the film in terms of like the pressure's on, we need to get this out, we need to write it, and we need to publish it so that we can be first and we can get the information out there that's correct. So
I believe it was the New Yorker.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, and it also says that was 2017 sense. And then later it was saying things about NBC News. He was continuing to work on it while he worked for NBC News. But anyway.
Okay. Another dislike for the movie is the Rose McGowan story isn't discussed a lot. It's kind of just left hanging in the balance. And she was, like you said, a big factor in this. And she was helpful in kind of making this story come to light. But she's not featured a ton in the movie.
Right. And maybe that was, maybe she didn't want to be, or maybe they only had enough time, because this movie was fairly long. So maybe they only had enough time, you know, to deal with that story. But I felt like that story, I would have liked a little more resolution, or at least, you know, when they do the end credits, when they'll say like explanations for things, maybe mention what else she did to help with that. And then the other thing, I felt like the postpartum depression piece was really important, because I know in the world, we hear about that a lot more, that that's a thing that happens to women, but we don't really see it depicted a lot in TV shows or on film. And I was really like interested in Carey Mulligan's character, like how she was dealing with that and how that was affecting her life and how she could work, or, you know, her marriage and raising her daughter and stuff. And I felt like it was a big deal for a few scenes, and then it just kind of tapered off. So that was one of the only storylines I was kind of like, I feel like there wasn't really quite a resolution, which maybe it took years. But I thought that was a little strange.
And then another dislike too was the pacing was just a little bit off in this movie. There's times when like lots of exciting stuff is happening, and then we kind of go through a little bit of a lull for a little bit, and then we have a really impactful conversation, and then it's kind of like, it just doesn't seem like it keeps up that pace throughout the whole, like a lot of journalism movies will build and will kind of get more and more tension. This is kind of what I talked about a few minutes ago, like where the end is just like super impactful. This one kind of goes like a little bit of a roller coaster where it goes up, and then it, you know, then we're back to normal for a few minutes, and then we go back up again, but it doesn't like, it's not like a slow build all the way till the end. So
agreed.
So, okay. Any other dislikes?
That is it for me.
Okay. Well, it's time to give our scores now for, She Said.
Okay. I'm first. I'm giving this a 91. I don't think I'm going to regret it, because it wasn't a perfect movie, but this is definitely my meat and potatoes kind of film. I love journalism movies. I love, like, and the actresses, I mean, everybody in it, I was so invested in this. And movies, too, that make me have emotional or physical reactions really stand out to me. And I thought they did a great job. I especially am impressed with how closely this was to, like, the actual women who reported it and the reporting of the story, how it took place, who helped when, giving real things like audio and survivors being in the film. I thought that was incredible. So it's a 91 for me. I thought it was excellent, and it was definitely one of my favorite films so far this year.
I'm going to go a little lower than you, but still pretty high. I'm going to give it an 85 out of 100. So I also really enjoyed it. I don't think it beats Spotlight for me. I think that's probably still my favorite journalism movie. This isn't my top 10 of the year so far right now, but again, we still have a whole month to go in terms of releases and Oscar movies coming out, so we'll see if it stays there. But it'll probably, if it's not in the top 10 at the end of the year, it'll just be just outside the top 10, and we'll probably make my honorable mentions at the end of the year. So
I think it's definitely gonna stay in my top 10, and my favorite journalism movie of all time is All the President's Men, and I don't think it will ever be beat, but best of luck to whoever tries.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of other big, you know, journalism stories you could do movies on, and there's not a ton. I mean, one of these types of stories, we didn't really talk about that, but one of these types of stories comes along every couple of years, like the Weinstein thing or the Catholic Church situation and Spotlight. I mean, one of these things kind of crops up every 5, 10, 12 years. It becomes a big national, like, you know, worldwide story. So we'll see what the next one is that gets made into a journalism movie. So
very exciting when it does, though. I'm looking forward to the next one.
And you can follow the Silver Screen Podcast on social media at Podcast Silver on Twitter and Instagram. Just search the Silver Screen Podcast on Facebook and you can find us there. And our Letterboxd profiles are in the description of the show notes if you want to follow us on Letterboxd, see what else we're watching that maybe we're not reviewing on the show. And you can go back and check all of our ratings too. They're on a Letterboxd is a out of five system, so it's a little different than how we rate them. Yeah. But pretty close if you want to go back and see what we maybe rated something. So and then on our next episode of the show, we're going to be reviewing the new movie The Wonder, starring Florence Pugh. This is on Netflix. Florence has been posting a lot about this. Have not watched it yet. It's a period piece, which sometimes I don't love those, but we'll see how this is. She's posting more about this than Don't Worry Darling, that's for sure.
Yeah, interesting. And I did read this book, but it was so long ago I don't remember hardly anything about it. I won't be able to tell you if it's close to the book or not.
Well, that'll be our next episode of the show, The Wonder.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.